This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin. The course was recently restored and recreated for a unique golf experience for both members and non-members. Lac La Belle is located in Oconomowoc, a convenient distance between Milwaukee and Madison. The semi-private golf club's grand opening was held June 20th. That means all 18 holes now open. Find out more on its website at clubatlaclabelle.com. I am Rob. He is Gary. This is Talking.Golf. And Gary D'Amato, since we last talked, our Ryder Cup speculation became Ryder Cup realization. The Ryder Cup is off for 2020. Move to 2021. We'll talk about the dominoes involved. Let's talk first about the way the news came down. Are you happy with the way the PGA of America rolled it out? And do you think they explained to everybody sufficiently how many marbles had to be moved to make this happen? I mean, it is just not a matter of saying we're playing the Ryder Cup next year, is it?
No, it was very complicated negotiation and decision. A lot went into it, Rob, as you know. We had, you know, TV contracts, vendor contracts, suppliers, you know, the European Tour is involved, the PGA Tour is involved. They had to move the President's Cup, and they had to negotiate for that date. The PGA of America did. It's not the exact date, but of course, you know, if you can't play the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup in back-to-back weeks, obviously. So something had to give there. So I'd have been loved to have been a fly on the wall when they talked about all this stuff and hashed it out. I'm sure they had, you know, all the entities, I'm sure, met many times and had a lot of Zoom conversations and phone calls. And so a lot went into this decision. It wasn't just fans or no fans. It was, as you've mentioned, the dominoes. A lot of things had to happen and then happened afterward once this was decided that they're not going to hold the Ryder Cup this year.
I was impressed watching the news conference, Gary, at how all the various entities are working so well together in the game of golf. I mean, we've seen it with the first tee. We've seen it with the rules of golf. We've seen it with the World Golf Handicap System. And now, arguably, the most difficult decision in the history of the Ryder Cup to move it from a pandemic year off of a pandemic year. This isn't, Gary, 9/11 when, you know, America was tacked a few weeks before the Ryder Cup matches. This is something that technically could have been played without fans, could have been played with 10,000 fans. Arguably, this is the most difficult decision I think these leaders ever had because, you know, there was a chance this could have been played.
Yeah, and, you know, when you look at the organizations involved and the negotiations involved, this probably wouldn't have happened, or at least as smoothly as it appeared to have happened, say, 30 years ago when the PGA of America and the PGA Tour got along, but maybe not necessarily to the degree they do today. There was a lot of give and take in this decision. The PGA Tour, you know, the President's Cup is a huge moneymaker for the PGA Tour, and now they move that back a year. This affects everyone's budgets too, Rob. You know, the PGA of America, you know, was expecting multiple millions, many millions of dollars to come into their coffers this year from the Ryder Cup. The Wisconsin PGA section was going to get some money. Wow. Now that's all delayed. But like Joe Stadler said, it's not like we're not going to get the money now. I mean, it's just pushed back a year. But all this money was built in the budgets. And this had to be an incredibly difficult decision. But on the other hand, the COVID-19 sort of made it a no-brainer that you have to move it.
I'm just glad, Gary, that you and I, golf fans in Wisconsin, didn't have to sit there and talk right up until September that, you know, is this the right thing? Is this the wrong thing? Was it going to be minimized by the pandemic? I'm looking forward to 2021, not only because, you know, the hope is that we have, you know, a vaccine for the virus and that that a lot of the talk outside of the reach of golf is taken care of by science, by the powers that be. But I'm also excited because it gives us another year to identify some guys who really could be exciting players on that team by then. And all you got to do is look at that playoff over the weekend. We had two of those golfers, you know, going mano a mano in Colin Morikawa and Justin Thomas at the Workday Charity Open. That was the temporary event put onto the PGA Tour in Dublin, Ohio, the first of back-to-back weeks. And they battled three holes. But what I liked, Gary, on that first playoff hole, Justin Thomas drains a 54-footer, and then Colin Morikawa knocks in a 25-footer. It was about 80 feet worth of putts there that helped extend the playoff. Those are the kinds of putts that I'd like to see in a Ryder Cup situation, because that's excitement. Those are two guys that I think are lock, stock, and barrel, really great contenders to be on that team next year. And I'm excited because there's more behind them.
You raise a very good point, Rob. And I think it could be a very, very young Ryder Cup team for the United States, and it could be a very, very long-hitting Ryder Cup team for the U.S. When you look at some of those young guys coming along now, the days of Jim Furyk and Zach Johnson and some of those guys who have played on multiple Ryder Cups, Tiger and Phil, are going to, I think, have a hard time making this team. The team could skew very young, and it could be a team that Steve Stricker can turn loose with the driver and say, let's go smash some 360-yard drives and bury these guys. So it's going to be really fun, I think, to see what transpires over the next year here.
I thought it was telltale, Gary, for at least 36 holes down at Dublin over the weekend. You know, Steve Stricker was on the cusp of the top 10, and I really felt like maybe the burden of having to deal with all this Ryder Cup talk was lifted, but he didn't have quite the weekend he had hoped. However, if you blend his 72 holes, or the best score between he and Jerry Kelly over those 72 holes, they would have been at 1,400, just five back of that playoff. That's not too bad for two old guys, is it?
That'd be a good best ball for a couple of 53-year-old guys. Yeah. Steve, it might have been a delayed reaction, Rob, with Steve. You know, he had so much on his plate last week, obviously. And, maybe he just wore out a little bit mentally and physically toward the end of the week, especially mentally and emotionally, having dealt with what he had to deal with last week. But, it's been a little bothersome that he hasn't really finished off tournaments this year very well. And I'm sure it's sticking in his craw, too. So he's got to find a way to turn those Saturday 72s and 3s into 68s and 9s, and he'll be right back up there, I think.
Now, Jerry Kelly, on the other hand, first competitive tournament since the Newport Beach tournament I saw him at back in early March, shoots 75 in the first round, then birdies his final hole to make the cut on the number, then finishes 68-70. He won't be in the field this week at back at Murfield Village for Jack's tournament, but he's got a title defense coming up here in a couple weeks over in Michigan, and I like the way he played, and I like the spunk that Jerry Kelly showed. Pretty cool to see Jerry Kelly kind of fighting with the young guys again.
I'll be honest with you, Rob, he surprised me. I thought that first round 75 was going to lead to a second round 73 and, bye-bye weekend. But he turned it around, played great on Friday. Surprised me a little bit. He hasn't played any competitive golf. I mean, when we talked to him and we heard him on the radio, too, a couple of times, it doesn't sound like he's played much competitive golf at all. Even banging it around with some of his tour friends down in Arizona, it didn't sound like he was even doing a lot of that. So to come out of the gates and do what he did and, against guys 30 years younger than him and 20 years younger than him, I thought was really impressive.
And while we're on this subject of Jerry Kelly and the Kelly family, you were out golfing today, so you may not be aware, but the Kelly clan lost another one of its patriarchs today. Jerry's uncle, Ron Kelly, that's Peggy Gearhart. Peggy Kelly Gearhart's father passed away today. And our hearts and thoughts go out to the whole Kelly clan. And of course, Jerry lost his dad, Jack, a couple years ago. And so there's two of the great Irishmen in the history of Wisconsin golf up there, toasting a Guinness. Ron Kelly, very involved in the Evans Scholars, the Western Golf Association. His daughter, Peggy, one of the all-time great high school coaches in the state of Wisconsin. So our thoughts go out to the whole Kelly clan, our prayers are with them. Gary, before we leave the Ryder Cup talk, the delay in Whistling Straits now delays everybody. Everything goes now to odd number years. 2023 is Rome. 2025 is Bethpage Black. 2027 is Ireland, and 2029 now is back at Hazeltine in Chaska, Minnesota, where arguably it was one of the most electric atmospheres on U.S. soil ever when they hosted last time. Can you believe it? Tiger Woods in 2029 will be 54 years old.
Wow. How the time flies. Rob, we were both there in 1996 when Tiger made his professional debut at Brown Deer Park, and boy, I can't believe it's been that many years and that he's on the cusp, not quite yet, but but he's approaching 50. I mean, he's approaching Champions Tour eligibility. It's just hard to believe. I mean, that's one guy. When I picture Tiger Woods, I picture him at age 25, just ripping courses apart. Not to say he still can't do that, but it's getting harder and harder, I think.
But Gary, if we learned one thing this summer, what's old is young again. All we got to do is look at our sponsor, the Club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin, but they've undergone 2 years worth of renovations, and their 18-hole layout is now open in its entirety, and you can play it, and it's one of the great gems of Wisconsin. You can check out more on its website at clubatlaclabelle.com. I have a hunch there might be some Illinois golfers coming up to play that course because the Club at Lac La Belle was down at the Chicago Golf Show over the winter. But Gary, golfers from Illinois have been coming over here all summer long, and it hasn't stopped today. We've got State Am qualifying down at Meadowbrook Country Club. The top six finishers, all from Illinois, led by Greg Bauman with a 4-under par 67. And you have to go down to Todd Schopp and Rocky Spurka and Ricky Kuiper of Racine to find three Wisconsin guys. 12 qualifiers, only four of them are Wisconsin golfers. It's starting. We've talked about this. We've written about this. It's a one-off, Bill Lindemann tells us from the WSGA, because Illinois doesn't have tournament golf this year. Wisconsin does. The rules in Wisconsin State, you can play in Wisconsin if you join the association and you don't go back to your originating state to play in the same championship there. But optically, it's getting harder and harder to watch these leaderboards with all this Illinois flavor on it. And I know, talking to a couple of the guys from the senior match play last week, one was a guy from North Carolina who came in and won it. And is in the process of moving to Onalaska. That's one thing. But when you're a guy that doesn't have any tie to Wisconsin, you come over and get in the state amateur. And now, as I talked to one of the guys, Gary, what happens if someone wins the state am and gets that lifetime exemption in a one-off year? All of a sudden he's exempt for life.
It's a really interesting situation this year, Rob. What happens if at our state amateur at venerable Milwaukee Country Club, Illinois finishes 1, 2, 3. It just doesn't look right. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't seem right. It's what we're living with this year. And the rules certainly will change the eligibility rules for next year. And like you said, this is a one-off, just a very unusual circumstance, but there's nothing wrong with Illinois golfers. All more power to them for coming up here and playing in tournaments. But I think the optic would not be good to have an Illinois amateur who doesn't play golf in our state win our state amateur. The state opens an entirely different prospect than, people yeah, we'll, who – well, yeah, we can we'll, touch on that in a minute.
We'll talk on that in a second because I think in the solution for the state amateur, we can look to the state open. But I want to correct one thing you say. You've got nothing against Illinois golfers. You and I have played against Illinois golfers for years in the Illinois-Wisconsin Riders Cup.
Yeah.
I don't want those guys coming across the board and playing my tournaments no matter what. And but those guys are just a bunch of yahoos. No, I'm just kidding. We love them to death. And that's the symbolic of our friendly competition, Gary, that we have to pick on the Team Illinois of the world, the Dan Rones and company. But I agree with you. I think we can look to the state open, we'll look to that in a second. I did want to say too, though, that in talking to the guy who won the state senior match play, Joe Davis is his name. He comes from down near Charlotte, North Carolina, and his wife has ties to the La Crosse area, lived just over the border in Minnesota. But they have not only, and this is where golf reporting has come in 2020, Gary. When he was in the process of taking down Ed Zurbich Jr. out of Brookfield last week in the finals over at Blackhawk Country Club, I put an email into Jim Kellenberger up at La Crosse Country Club to kind of get some info on Joe Davis because it said he was from La Crosse Country Club. And right away, Jim fired back an email saying that, yeah, Joe joined the club this spring. His job allows him, and like many jobs do now, to telecommute and to work remotely. So they came back, started looking for a home. They're going to close on a home in Onalaska in about 4 weeks. And he said that the folks around the club absolutely love Joe Davis. And he's a guy that played many moons ago at Davidson University and stopped playing for a long time and then just started up about when he was age 55. He's played in one USAM and came back here knew somebody who belonged at Blackhawk, played the course, thought he could play it halfway decent. But honestly, Gary, like a lot of us, he just wanted to get into match play, and then he also wanted to win one match. He thought that would be a good week's work. He winds up running the table and winning the thing. And again, I don't think, Gary, as we put a bow on the state and conversation and look for that solution, I don't think people are coming to Wisconsin to play tournament golf if our tournament golf wasn't so darn good. Is that possible, that also is part of the conversation here as we talk about why this is happening?
Very much so. And I think, you know, Illinois golfers who came up here earlier in this year and played in our match play, and the Ray Fisher, I'm sure have gone back and talked to their guys and said, hey, you got to get up to Wisconsin and play some tournament golf up there. The Wisconsin State Golf Association does a great job running tournaments. And Chad Slutsky, the guy who won our match play from Illinois, I overheard him on the first tee of the championship match talking to Joe Weber and saying, man, I can't believe how good the tournaments are run here. Your state association is way better than what we have in Illinois. And this is just, you know, he said, look at this course, Club at Strawberry Creek. It's just beautiful. And, you know, he said, I never even heard of this golf course. And he was really effusive in his praise of how tournaments are run up here. Credit to Bill Linneman, Rob Jansen, and the crew at WSGA for how they do run tournaments.
Yeah, it's I think it's been that way for a long, long time, going back to when Gene Haas set courses up real difficult and helped prepare guys for future levels of golf. But the depth of the juniors, the depth of the women's tournaments this year has been incredible. And we'll talk more about that next week when they have their state women's am. But yeah, it is just amazing. And now we segue into the start of state open qualifying. And that begins tomorrow at Tuckaway Country Club, the first of, I believe, 8 regular qualifying sites. And then there'll be a last chance qualifier for those who didn't have a chance to make the first 8, or those who want a second chance, didn't get in through the first batch of qualifiers. Neil Johnson, Zach Gaugert coming back from Arizona to try to qualify tomorrow. And I know Neil's really excited to play Tuckaway again, because Gary, that's where he lost his state open exemption. And Neil was very much at the root of us fighting for non-resident or guys who move away from Wisconsin to be able to be allowed back into the tournament. And now I think the WPGA, in doing that, has kind of perhaps solved a lot of problems for a lot of people, and especially the WSGA, when they have the conversation about Wisconsin or non-resident golfers being in their fields. It's pretty simple. You either have to have played high school golf in the state of Wisconsin or college golf in the state of Wisconsin, and you're eligible to play in the qualifier to get into the main draw. I think if I had, you know, guys coming back from over the border, a guy that came back over the border for years, Jocko Ruth, a former Badger golfer who played for Dennis Tiziani back in the 80s, you know, I have no problem with Jocko Ruth coming back over the border to play. And then there's also the concept that there are some member courses over the border, such as Riverside Golf Course in Menominee, Michigan, that is a WSGA and a WPGA member. We haven't had that situation in a while. So it is totally worth, I think, considering, you know, going that route. Before we wrap up the podcast for today, though, Gary, we need to look at the state open qualifying and then also look at the exempt field. We have a couple of exciting names in the state open that are already in because they don't have to qualify. Mark Wilson and Skip Kendall are coming back to play. I think that's great news.
Oh, so do I. How about a 5-time PGA Tour winner in Mark Wilson and Skip Kendall, a guy who's won multiple times on the Corn Ferry Tour and has over 700 starts in PGA Tour sanctioned events. All that experience, that wealth of experience and great play that they've had over the years, coming back to play in our state open. Skip was kind of funny. I heard him on Chuck Garbedian's radio show over the weekend, and he said, doggone it, I was hoping no one would find out I'm in the field. But he said, you know, I hope they take it easy on an old guy, but if lightning strikes, you know, I could be in there. So it would be great to see those guys play well and do something, make some noise in the state open against some of the better young players that we have in our state.
And, you know, just to look at the exempt list that they had to commit to play in the event by last Friday. We don't know whether spectators will be allowed yet. The WPGA is still considering that. This is, again, at Blue Mountain Golf and Country Club, the 100th Wisconsin State Open, August 17th through the 19th. But a lot of great names in the field that have competed in the past and done quite well. But we've written about a lot of these guys. Jordan Ellison, the former champion, who played some mini tour golf. Austin Gauger, who's done more golf, more involved with caddying for Casey Danielson and Jordan Niebrugge here in the last couple of years. He's going to tee it up. John Gullberg, former Badger, who's been playing some of the mini tours. Kyle Henning, Emmett Herb. Pearson Hunt is going to play before heading back off to the University of Illinois this fall. We also, of course, have Hunter Eichhorn, the rising star at Marquette University. Emmett Herb, one of the great D3 golfers up at St. Thomas. And Austin Kanzorski, George Kneiser of Oconomowoc, just turned pro, wrapped up his eligibility at UW-Green Bay. He's going to be playing in a Corn Ferry Tour qualifier soon. John Langhoff, who should be playing on the Canadian Tour this year. And he, of course, that tour taking the year off because of COVID. Harrison Ott did commit too. He was not supposed to be in the field, Gary, because Vandy was going to start college golf real soon. We really don't know what's going to happen with college golf. That might be a whole podcast coming up here soon. And Jim Schumann, we weren't sure whether Jim Schumann, either shoulder-wise or commitment-wise, I think he had something else on the calendar at one point, was going to play. But I love this field. I love the fact that there's the potential for more guys to join the field here through qualifying. And it's going to be a great 100th Wisconsin State Open. This tournament always, one of the special ones because of its history. And we've had some great champions, and I believe this is the year that Dan Woltman can join the list of the is it the five or the six time champions with Steve Stricker in that group.
Yeah, five time champion Steve Stricker, Bob Brew, who's the third?
Manuel, there's a Manuel De La Torre, and then there's someone way back in the early stages. I'll look that up, but that it's amazing the history behind this tournament, Gary. And I've always maintained it should have guys like Skip Kendall and Mark Wilson. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I remember when Steve Stricker was, just ascending on the PGA Tour and starting to play real well, and he came back and played in the State Open a couple times. It just, Ben Walter beat him one year when Steve was on the PGA Tour. That created a lot of excitement. I remember there were big crowds at Trapper's Turn, and I think that's great that those guys come back, and they should be welcome with open arms. There might be, a handful of guys in the field who say, what are those guys coming back for? But the answer is simple then, go beat them, if you want to win the State Open, then you got to beat the best of the best. So go beat them but don't complain about those guys being in the field. That's the way I feel about it anyway.
I do too. And I've always thought, I know when I talked to Andy North when I was young in this job, about why he never came back. It was kind of a no-win situation for a two-time U.S. Open champion at that time. Yeah. But, this is one I'd like to see, maybe one or two women added to the field. The State Open champion, I think, would be for women, would be a great addition. Some of the mini tour gals like a Casey Danielson, I think, would compete well in this. And it would also prepare them for what's coming ahead, especially at this time of the year with all these key schools that are, in normal years looming down the road. It won't be this year, but this year it's one of the few things that people can play in as they get ready for what we hope to be a college season. But to answer your question, Gary, about the trivia about five-time State Open champions, you mentioned Steve Stricker, Bob Brew, Manuel De La Torre, and Francis Gaillet.
Oh, yeah, Francis Gaillet, yeah.
Is it Gaillet?
I think it's Gaillet,
together,
yeah.
In my language, I always go the Y. But Francis Gaillet from the early stages of the Wisconsin State Open, a five-timer, and that's the company Dan Woltman's trying to join. And Dan and Jordan Niebrugge have not had the greatest success here in the restart on the Corn Ferry Tour. We were hoping that the time off would help them, but they haven't found, that little spark that they need to kind of, get back into contention and make cuts out there. So maybe coming back will help Dan Woltman's game in the long term. But history could be made. History will be made. It's the 100th State Open. I'm already looking forward to it.
Jordan Niebrugge is not on the list of exempt. I mean, he won it at age 18. He was the youngest winner ever the State Open, but he's not entered at this point, and it's too late to enter, correct?
That is correct. That is correct. So we'll have, he's one of the, few, and I know Charlie Danielson's still on the mend with that knee.
Right.
And So, you know, a couple missing names, but not many. This really, Neil Johnson, Zach Augert, a couple mini tour guys can get in. This could be a really, really good field.
Absolutely. And, you know, Mark Wilson and Skip Kendall, they can't just tee it up and, you know, and collect a check and a trophy. They're going to have to play well. I mean, there's, as you mentioned, all the names you mentioned, you ran off before, a lot of really good players. And Mark and Skip are going to have their work cut out if they want to win a state open, for sure.
Well, and Mark coming over the dark side of golf media, Gary, we may not be able to shut him up. Huh?
Yeah, maybe he can do some reporting during the middle of his round. That would be fun.
That's right. Well, Gary, it's been a pleasure chatting golf. It's been a very interesting week, to say the least, here with all the things going on in the local golf scene, from the Ryder Cup to the State Am qualifying, and now looking forward to the State Open qualifying and the actual 100th Wisconsin State Open next month. I appreciate your time, and we'll talk again next week.
Sounds good, Rob. Thank you.
All right, that's Gary D'Amato. I am Rob Hernandez. This has been Talking Dot Golf, sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin. The course was recently restored and recreated for a unique golf experience for both members and non-members alike. Lac La Belle is located in Oconomowoc, a convenient distance between Madison, Milwaukee. All 18 holes of the course that underwent a two-year renovation are now open, and you can find out more on its website at clubatlaclabelle.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk to you again next week.